If Rhode Island was a lake, we'd all be drowning under the weight of decades of reports and expert commissions charged with dissecting our state's economic doldrums. Wonks, business leaders, academics, and consultants have produced turgid chronicles with scant results on how to heal one of the sickest economies in New England. It wasn't always this way. At the turn of the 20th century, Providence was the most prosperous of American cities, and Rhode Island was the Silicon Valley of that era. The Ocean State's factories thrummed with activity, churning out textiles, jewelry, heavy machinery, tools, and steam engines. Rhode Island's a watery sliver of New England, a place with few natural resources save fish. So the Yankee tinkerers and inventors forged an economy grounded on making things for people around the nation and, indeed, around the globe. Slowly but steadily, the bottom fell out as manufacturers left for places with cheaper labor and lower energy costs. Textiles moved to the American South and then to the Third World, followed by the jewelry industry. Arguably the last fine time for Rhode Island industry was during World War II and just after, when defense industries, U.S. Navy installations, and manufacturing were still the sturdy spine of the economy. But beneath that veneer, Rhode Island's economy was imploding. In the 1950s, every week brought news of another textile mill shuttering or moving south. Things got so bad that state government hatched a plan to build a huge oil refinery on the northern tip of Jamestown. That deal went down when wealthy Newport summer residents challenged it in federal court. Years later, when Governor Dennis Roberts was asked why he supported such a polluting industry on the bay, he said the state was desperate for jobs. By the 1980s, not much had changed. The state considered an industrial policy called the Greenhouse Compact that proposed pumping millions of dollars in venture capital into the Rhode Island economy to create jobs. But the public feared politicians would turn it into a patronage swamp. Voters resoundingly defeated it in a statewide referendum. For years, lawmakers have groped for solutions. Too often, these have been foolish, single-bullet plans that failed, like the Alpha-Beta biotech fiasco under Governor Bruce Sundlin in the 1990s, or 38 Studios under Governor Donald Carcieri. Both those companies were lured here from Massachusetts, then went broke, leaving taxpayers holding the bag. What Rhode Island lacks is anchor industries in a 21st century economy fueled by highly educated workers in such fields as technology, medical research, and biotechnology. Rick McIntyre, chairman of the University of Rhode Island Economics Department, says what's different here from other New England states is the lack of large, technically sophisticated, growing companies. McIntyre also faults the all-too-typical statehouse response to attracting business, cutting taxes, and, quote, hoping something will happen. McIntyre says that's been tried many times, and it's failed. The collateral of such tax policies has fewer state dollars to push policies everyone knows will lead to a better economy, such as investing in education and infrastructure, and developing innovative programs that nurture young entrepreneurs. Everyone from Governor Gina Raimondo down to newly minted lawmakers point to Boston and such technology-rich places as Kendall Square in Cambridge. Well, Kendall Square didn't flourish overnight. It was a rundown neighborhood a generation ago. Boston business leader Jack Connors says only half in jest, the crucial element there is, quote, putting two of the best universities in the world next to each other and waiting 200 years. What's needed now is for the Smith Hill crowd to listen to the hopes and fears of everyday Rhode Islanders rather than the lobbyists who prowl the marble corridors of the statehouse, to assess how we are emerging from the deep recession and who is still left behind.